You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the 66 to 87 podcast. I am Tom Reed, joined as always by Dave Molinari, who is enjoying a lovely, pleasant trip out in Western Canada. Dave, it sounds like you have had a planes, trains, and automobiles type of first few days in Canada. Doesn't sound like you're having as much fun as I thought you might.
Yeah, I think I've been hit by all three of those vehicles. At least that's the way it feels. It has not been a pleasant journey to this point.
I think we were talking off air that the COVID restrictions are different as far as the identification and stuff you need to have, and apparently Pennsylvania is not one of the states that has been able to give the cards, and it's been just kind of a crazy trip, huh?
Yeah, Pennsylvania, getting a card isn't a problem. What at least some, if not all, Canadian provinces are now requiring are QR codes on smartphones that can be scanned. I particularly ran into that issue with trying to get on flights from Calgary to Edmonton and Edmonton to Vancouver. I think the other Pittsburgh writers who were on the trip encountered similar difficulties. So it's been an adventure.
Yeah. Right now, the team, we're recording this on Thursday. The team just coming off of a 5-2 loss against Edmonton. Still sitting right at the bottom of the qualification zone, the wild card spot. Not playing bad, not playing great, just hanging in there. Again, obviously, still no Malkin. Dave, I wanted to kind of, this first segment, get your thoughts on Sidney Crosby, kind of 11 games back. As all fans know, he missed the start of the season, missed training camp, all that with the recovering from the wrist surgery, then gets dealt a blow with COVID. He's played 11 games in Tuesday, two goals, six assists. Again, I don't put a whole lot of stock in him plus minus, but he has the worst plus minus on the team at minus eight. Where do you think his game is right now?
Well, I think perhaps the question we should really be considering is what is the ceiling for his game at this stage of his career?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, that might, if we knew that, it would give us a little more perspective on where his game is at right now. It certainly is nowhere near what we're accustomed to seeing from him. But you know, whether those expectations are realistic anymore or not, you know, I guess we will find out as the season moves along. He is 34 years old, has a lot of hard miles on him. And while he's a superior athlete and incredibly well-conditioned and all of that, time does catch up with everyone. And he's played an awful lot of hockey for a guy who's missed a lot of games because of injuries and concussions and whatever. he's played an awful lot of hockey. I mean, when you factor in, you know, Olympics and Stanley Cup playoffs and things like that. So he's got some hard miles on him, and he doesn't take the easy way out. So, you know, it will be interesting to see just how far he can elevate his game. But to this point, he doesn't look very much, you know, like himself. I thought a steady, if not spectacular, increase in the caliber of his play until the game in Edmonton on Wednesday night, when he had a pretty good first period, so-so second, I thought, and in the third, he, like the rest of the team, just had a night to forget. And I think, you know, he ended up being on the ice for all five Edmonton goals. It really was a pretty stark reminder of how, you know, Connor McDavid is generally acknowledged to have surpassed him as the game's top player at this point.
Yeah, it's weird because it you know, just even on our podcast, as I was planning this out today, I think it feels like we've talked more about Crosby before he came back into the lineup than we have talked about him since he's been playing. We've talked a lot about Tristan Jarry. And I think this kind of goes to what you've been saying, is that he's not quite there, and we don't know exactly where the ceiling is, but I have to believe there's more, and I have to believe I want to think that, again, this guy didn't have a normal training camp, right? I mean, he was skating.
He didn't have any training. Yeah, he didn't have any training camp, really.
He was skating, right? That's all he had. Yeah, I can remember about 8 million Dave Molinari videos on Twitter of Sidney Crosby out and around, or maybe that's more Malkin, but it has been kind of an odd start for him. You just don't, you think of him as always being near the top of the team or the top of the league in anything. Mm-hmm. And he just seems to be there right now.
I mean, if somebody had told you, especially before the surgery, that a couple months into the season that Crosby would be 12th in scoring, you'd think, that's a little lower in the league than you expect. Right. And then you realize that you're actually talking about him being 12th on the team in scoring.
Yeah.
Now, he's missed half the game. So, that obviously is a factor. But, if you doubled his point production, he would be tied with Evan Rodriguez. So,
okay. I'm willing to give Sid some more time here to kind of get back to his level of play, whatever that is. But I know it's higher than it is right now because, Dave, I mean, this Eastern Conference, this division, this Metro Division is really I don't know. Again, we with the elephant in the room, of course, is Malkin and what he's going to be like when he gets back. But I think that they're going to need more from Crosby if this team wants to comfortably be in the playoffs, right? Whether it be a wild card or just getting in.
Yeah, I mean, they're not good enough anymore to get by without something close to maximum productivity from just about everybody on the roster.
Yeah.
The days when they could dominate most opponents, you know, by sheer virtue of their skill, those are history. And they're going to need Crosby to get his game to, you know, whatever the highest level he is capable of. They're going to need Kasperi Kapanen to score some goals. They're going to need to get more out of Jason Zucker. They're certainly going to need Malkin to play at a high level, once, as with Crosby, he gets a chance to work his way back into, something resembling game shape. He's certainly been very impressive in his workouts. He's skating well. His puck skills still seem to be there, but you have to keep in mind that these are just workouts. You know, he's not on the ice. you know, with opponents who are trying to cause him problems. So, you know, have to keep especially the early expectations of him reasonable. But, you know, ultimately he's going to be a big guy for them, just like Crosby is. And, you know, they're going to, when Brian Rust comes back, they're going to need more productivity from him. If I were in management, I wouldn't be giving the go-ahead to print playoff tickets just yet, although I guess nobody actually prints playoff tickets anymore.
No. Just real quickly on Malkin before we close out this segment, you would expect him to play sometime in December?
I would, but, you know, that decision, I'm sure, will be based on medical considerations that – I have absolutely no access to
sure.
You know, the pertinent information. He looks in these workouts as if he could step into the lineup today, if there was something to step into today. And I'm sure they would, you know, love to have him back as quickly as possible. But, you know, until the medical people decide that it is prudent for him to, you know, be exposed to the challenges and dangers of playing in games, I don't think we'll see him. From a layman's perspective, absolutely, I expect to see him sometime in December, and probably not in the terribly distant future. But, you know, that decision is ultimately going to hinge pretty much entirely on what the medical people determine.
Okay. We're just getting started here. We'll be back after the break here. Stick with us. A little bit later, we will have Alice Lucan from the Seattle Kraken. The Kraken will be hosting the Penguins on Monday. Stay with us here on the 66-87 podcast. Welcome back to the 66-87 podcast. In our next segment, we're going to be joined by friend of the podcast, Allison Lucan, writer for the Seattle Kraken and also on-air TV personality for the Kraken, and does a great job out there. But before we get to that, Dave, I wanted to talk a little bit about we're about a quarter of the way through the season, and obviously, the storyline going into that game Monday night is going to be kind of the reunion with a couple of the players. Brandon Tanev, tremendously popular in his time here with the Penguins. Jared McCann, who ended up being traded to Toronto but then ends up in Seattle. Both of those guys have had a decent start for a team that is more of a predictable expansion team. Not everybody can be Las Vegas when they come in the league. They're near the bottom of the standings. But both of those players are having a decent year. McCann is second on the team in goals with 10 goals, despite the fact that he's missed four of their games. And Tanev is, five games. And Tanev is what he always is. He's brings a lot of energy, has 8 goals, 13 points, is in the plus category, in the plus minus. But I guess my first question to you, Dave, is one-fourth of the way through the season, how much do they miss those two guys? And has a guy like McGinn been able to at least kind of play to the level at least that fans saw with Brandon Tanev? Give me your thoughts on how much they missed those two guys over the first quarter of the season.
Well, I really thought that they made a mistake when they exposed Tanev in the expansion draft, because I thought they would really miss the energy that he brings to his team, just with the frenetic style that he plays. Sure. But Brock McGinn has fit in pretty nicely, I think, with Teddy Bluger and Zach Aston-Reese in Tanev's old spot. And while he is not the same player that Tanev is. I think he's probably Tanev's equal or better overall. So, you know, by and large, I don't think that Tanev's departure has hurt them significantly. Given some of the issues they've had at times with goal scoring, they probably would have liked to have had Jared McCann around, assuming he wasn't going through one of his protracted stretches where he's unable to find the net. Really streaky guy, but when he gets on a good streak, he can score on a regular basis. And, as he showed last year in limited time with the number one power play unit, he still led the Penguins in man advantage goals. So there is, there is some scoring ability there, and he's still, I don't think he's a finished product yet. There is some upside still in Jared McCann's game.
I don't know if this guy was ever thought of as he would be exposed. And certainly if I remember the timeline correctly, before they had to make a decision on who they were going to expose, they re-signed Teddy Bluger, which I think there were some people, and I don't think you were one of them, were thinking, well, would you rather expose Bluger or would you rather expose Tanev? I was bullish on Bluger. I just think as a center, just because of just the position itself, it's important. I think maybe you were more of the Jeff Carter, right? Go ahead and dare them to take a 36-year-old guy or whatever his age is now.
Yeah, that was my, had I been in charge of putting together their protected list, I would have protected Tanev and exposed Carter. The Penguins might well have been operating with some knowledge that the rest of us didn't have at the time, specifically that there was a chance that they would be starting the season without, Crosby and Malkin. Neither of their surgeries or planned surgeries had been made public at that point. So that would come down, pretty heavily in favor of keeping a proven veteran center like Jeff Carter around. And who knows, perhaps if that was a major factor in their thinking, maybe they would have dared Ron Francis to claim him rather than risk losing Tanev. But that's something we'll probably never know.
Carter's numbers have been okay. I do wonder, it's almost, I don't want to say it's unfair because he's a pro and a really good one, but it's been a lot to ask of Carter, has it not? For a guy his age to be playing the minutes that he's playing. There have been a couple of games where I've noticed he looks like they're just asking a lot of somebody that age to play at that level. I think I really think that once they, assuming they ever get back to whole, at least the center ice position, obviously Crosby's back and Malkin, Penguin fans hope is just a week or two away. I think he'll become more effective, maybe playing a little bit of a reduced role. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, he was brought in because they thought he would be a really good guy to have on their third line. And as it is, he spent half of this season centering the top line and he's now on the second line. Until Malkin comes back, assuming Crosby stays healthy, Carter will stay on that second line, and the Penguins have got to start getting more out of that unit. Kasperi Kapanen and Jeff Zucker, have got to do a little more in terms of goal scoring, and just that entire line's effectiveness. I think they can and have to be better for this team to come close to reaching its potential.
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, you watch Zucker play, and it's the effort is there every night. And of course, it always takes a guy a season. Sometimes it takes a guy a season or so to kind of get used to a new team. But it is amazing to me that he has not been able to kind of ever reach the offensive level that he reached when he was with the Wild.
Yeah, I mean, and I wish I had the answer to that, because I would sell it to the Penguins for a lot of money, because I'm sure they would, you know, would like to have him return to something resembling the form that he showed during his 33 goal season with the Wild. And you would think that with the personnel that he's played with here, that he would be a pretty consistent scorer. I mean, he's not going to be a Rocket Richard Trophy contender, but 25 goals, you know, playing on the second line with this team doesn't seem like it would be too much to expect. But yeah, and you know, the mystifying part is it's not a lack of effort. The guy works hard every time he goes over the boards. He, you know, he doesn't shy away from traffic. It's something of a mystery, but it's one that if the Penguins aren't able to solve it, probably for the good of all concerned, they'll have to at least, you know, consider the possibility of trying to trade him to address some other personnel issues, or even to get a replacement for Zucker.
American Thanksgiving, which we just passed a week ago, is usually the time where I start to pay attention to the standings. The first month and a half, as I've always looked at, is you're like a squirrel. You're just collecting nuts. It's all you're doing. Don't worry about anything around you. Just get nuts to collect. So you've got enough nuts to go into the winter. And then around Thanksgiving, early December, you start to look and say, okay, do I have enough? Or where am I compared to everyone else's nut collection, to belabor this analogy? And the Penguins are okay. They're okay, given the fact that they did not have Sidney Crosby early in the season. And again, as we mentioned in the first segment, he's not quite to where we think that he's going to end up as far as his form. They're not in a bad position. As of Thursday, they're sitting in a playoff spot, the final wild card spot. But I feel pretty good about this team's chances this season going forward. Yes, the top of the conference is really strong. The Rangers have been a little bit better than I thought. Washington, Carolina, no surprises there. You knew they were going to probably be near the top. That Atlantic Division is what it is. Toronto, Florida, and Tampa are where you kind of thought they would be. But I want to look toward the bottom of it, Dave, the conference. Boston is a team that you would expect to at some point pop up in the top eight. It's just because they've been so good for so long, you would think that they would be okay. But the teams below there, who's going to make a push? I watched the Flyers the other night. I've seen them a couple times lately. They are missing players. Don't get me wrong. That team does not look good. They do not look good, and it would not shock me if there was some kind of change made with the Flyers. Alain Vigneault, they signed him to a big contract. He's certainly been a proven coach over the years. That team does not look very good, and this Carter Hart has played better. I think that's – you know, they figured, we talked a lot last season about Carter Hart. You know, if Carter Hart plays better, this team will certainly be in a hunt. He has played better. And yet here are the Flyers sitting 5 points out of the last playoff spot and going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's quite a surprise. This is the second year in a row where they have considerably underachieved based on what I expected from them. And last year, as you mentioned, it was pretty easy to point to Carter Hart's goaltending as the reason for that. But this year, they look like a bad team, and they certainly don't look that way on paper. So, you do have to wonder if Alain Vigneault is going to be on a pretty short leash, and you know, if it's funny if they would decide to do something internally. They have a couple of assistant coaches who have been head coaches with multiple teams in this league, in Michel Therrien and Mike Yeo.
I, you know what? I completely agree with the idea that both of those guys have had head coaching experience. But I'm telling you, it would not shock me to see Rick Tocchet behind that bench in January if the Flyers cannot pull out of this. And Dave, they've made changes, right? They did not stay with the status quo on that team. They had some serious shakeups in the offseason. Voracek out. They rebuilt their blue line. Again, they like, but can't use injuries as an excuse. Every team goes through them. They just do not look like a team that right now looks like a team that's going to really seriously contend for a playoff spot. The other team that I think will make a push at some point is the one very familiar to the Penguins, the team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year, the Islanders. Dave, they have the second worst record in the Eastern Conference. And a large part of that, again, they started the season with 8 road games. They're now into their new building. Then they get hit from just wave of COVID to the point where the league had to pause their season for a couple games. I believe they're getting back tonight again as we record. Have only played 17 games, so that skews it a little bit. But they have 12 points. This is a team that thought that they were going to contend for the cup this year. Can they make up that? Can they make up a 13-point gap over the last three quarters of the season?
Well, they can. And just for the sake of clarity, they didn't start with 8 games on the road. I believe it was 13 games. On the road before they opened their new building. And yes, there's enough time to close a considerable gap like the one facing New York, especially when they have games in hand on everybody. But something to bear in mind is you not only have to close the point gap, but you know you have to hurdle a number of teams that are in front of you. And especially with the 3-point games that exist in the league today, that can be pretty difficult if you get too many clubs separating you from a playoff spot. So, the Islanders are in a pretty precarious spot considering that it's just early December.
And the other thing that works against them in my mind is they're a team in recent years that strikes me as a team built for the playoffs. And when I say that, they're built to play in a series every other day where they can wear you down. They have not necessarily been a strong regular season team where you're just going and playing an opponent and moving on to the next city and playing another opponent. They have not been one of those teams that have been at the top of the standings year in and year out. Now, last year was kind of a strange year where I think they may have fallen back to fourth in the division late in the year. But they have a lot of work to do, and that is not the strength of the Islanders. And just they're not a great regular season team. They're a good regular season team. They are in serious danger right now in my eyes.
Yeah, I don't think you'd find too many people to disagree with that. That's they're in a tough spot, and it's one that I think very few people expected them to be in, even knowing that they were likely to get off to something of a ragged start just because of not getting into their new arena until November.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Allison Lucan. We'll talk a lot about Brandon Tanev, Jared McCann. So stick with us here on the 66-87 podcast. Podcast, and we are now joined by our good friend Allison Lucan. who is now on-air personality covering the Seattle Kraken and also does a lot of writing for the website. Allison, it's great to have you. Allison and I work together at different times. A lot of people know her just from her tremendous analytics work. But somebody was finally smart enough in the NHL to hire this woman full-time and is doing a great job covering the NHL's expansion team, Seattle Kraken. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, Allison.
Well, I am thrilled as always to talk to you and thrilled as always to be on this show. So thank you for having me.
Yes. Allison, I think one of the things that's interesting from your perspective is you are a Columbus, a Central Ohio native. When the Blue Jackets started, you were living in Washington. You were working in a former life. You were doing something different. You were living in Washington, but then you moved back to the area. You certainly got a sense of what the excitement was like in Columbus. And I wonder if you can kind of compare now that you are covering this expansion franchise in Seattle, Washington. I'm sure it's had to go through your mind what you remember things like in Columbus and what's going on in Seattle now.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't here, like you said, but I do remember particularly the excitement that the Blue Jackets brought just in terms of development and reviving the downtown. I had grown up here, so I know what the downtown used to be and seeing what it was becoming. And then excitement for a new sport. I think where we see some difference, and people who are in Columbus know this, is that Seattle is a little more versed in having pro sports around.
Sure, sure.
While they're a little less versed in hockey. There's obviously some quality junior hockey out there. But they're learning the sport perhaps a little bit more. So there's a different kind of excitement, but I do feel, again, that just total sense of hope, that full building night after night, people just so excited to cheer for anything and be excited by everything from a big hit to a big goal and cheering for a goaltender, even if they've let in 20 shots before the one that they save. It's the purity of it is really something special to see.
And it really, I mean, I think fans, Penguins fans, when they play there on Monday, will hear that in the broadcast. I know in watching several of the games, it really comes through on television, at least. And I can't imagine what it's like to be in that building on nights when the team's playing and playing well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. What if, for listeners who don't know, the Kraken basically renovated a building that has been a landmark in Seattle for decades. And so the community is excited about that, being able to go back to a location they had known and loved and had kind of fallen out of total utility. So they're excited, just like I said, with Columbus, to see a part of their city rejuvenated. And, you know, this Kraken team hasn't always had the best games. They've had some really tough stretches. And like I said, to see the arena stay almost completely full in a game that most of us would consider unwinnable and just cheer their hearts out for this team for anything they did, it really is amazing. It's a huge credit to what these fans are doing and the energy they're bringing to this team. And what I really like is that the players really appreciate it too. You hear them talk about it. You hear the coaching staff talk about it. It really means something to the people in the organization as well.
It's just a little backstory here. It quickly, for fans who aren't basketball fans, it was a huge loss for the Seattle
yes.
area to lose the Sonics. I mean, and
yes.
I do wonder when that happened at the time, if they ever wondered if they were going to get another professionals franchise. Obviously, they have the Seahawks and the Mariners there, but would they ever get that third franchise? And boy, they seem to really be really enjoying the start of this. Now, Vegas obviously set an outrageously high bar for expansion franchise, and I think a lot of people thought, well, that's probably not too realistic. It seems, Allison, that what the Kraken are going through is more of what we think of in a typical expansion inaugural season, correct?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, this team is very honest with themselves too. I mean, even the forwards will kind of say, there's a whole bunch of us that are pretty much at the same level. So,
yeah.
They know that. I think that the model that this front office had going into this season was very sound. And I think part of what people predicated success for this organization on was we all kind of thought this Pacific division wasn't going to be as strong as it's looking, at least early mm-hmm. here. And so I think that that's where a lot of the optimism for Seattle came from. So I think the outside hockey world is trying to reconcile that. And that's hard if you don't, for any team, if you don't pay attention 24/7. But again, the fans right now, they're still all bought in and riding the wave with this group. But this, they are what they thought they would be, except with maybe some faltering in goaltending that we didn't expect.
Well, I mean, just as a wonderful television analyst you are, it's a perfect segue into our next question. I do think the one number that kind of sticks out early on, and again, not totally surprising as far as the giving you teams give up a lot of goals. A lot of times they don't score a lot of goals, but they do tend to give up a lot of goals. I think as we're recording on Thursday, I think fifth from the bottom, goals against average 3.48. You just alluded to it. Did you think has the goaltending been a big part of that, or why are the Kraken giving up so many goals early on?
Yeah, you know, and Tom, you know me. I can't just leave well enough alone. I have to dig into the why. So, So even if we look at this goaltending performance, because it has, let's be honest, it has not been what everyone expected, including the goaltenders themselves. They're honest about it. Sure. But you know, if you look at the quality against that the Kraken are allowing, it's one of the top five in the league. So yeah. Now you say, huh? So is it goaltending? But what we've really been exploring, and I don't know that we have the answer yet, I think that often, and most of us don't give goaltenders their well due. We don't understand the position, so we don't really dig into what they're facing. And these goaltenders were pretty upfront with me, even before the season started, that they're going to have to adjust mainly to understanding how the players in front of them, what they're going to give them and expect them to stop, and what they're going to stop for them. And we've started to look at some specific types of chances against that have really been struggles for these goaltenders. One has been rush chances. And, you know, if you look at a couple of these goals against, you can see where maybe a goaltender doesn't take the poke check because he expects to have support from his defender, and the defender's expecting the goaltender poke check. So there are little nuances here that I think, just as much as we talk about skaters having to adapt to a whole new system, we're seeing that with these goaltenders. I don't think it's that either goaltender has fundamentally just lost their game. I think it's taking longer than anyone wanted to for them to adapt. But I do think we need to continue to ask, what kinds of chances have these goals against been coming on? Is there a pattern? And then how does the team in front of these goaltenders adapt their system to make sure everyone's on the same page in terms of how they respond to an offensive attack?
There you go.
Allison, Brandon Tanev was... not surprisingly, a fan favorite in Pittsburgh during his time there. How has he been received in Seattle?
Well, he is a fan favorite in Seattle, I'll tell you. And you know, for people who know him, they know that, you know, the way he plays is, particularly if you're a newer fan to hockey, it's an easy style to draw the eye. It's tenacious. It's high energy. He's got that flowing hair. He mimicked the headshot that he had from Pittsburgh with the crazy eyes, and fans love that. And then he came out of the gate as one of the more repetitive and repeatable scorers for this team, especially early on. So it's been really easy for fans to love him. I think he's just being true to what he is. He's part of a tenacious line that is aggressive on the forecheck, that will skate down pucks, hard on the pucks, provide some scoring chances. Fans love him. There's no surprises for people who followed his game. And I think as of last count, his jersey was one of the top two selling in the market.
Oh, and another Penguin who ended up in Seattle, albeit with a detour through Toronto, was Jared McCann. As we were recording this, he has 10 goals, which is not bad for anybody at this point of the season. How has he performed overall for the Kraken?
Yeah, Jared McCann is one of my personal favorites on this team. And I think that he maybe doesn't get as much attention because, as you know, he's not a flashy player. He's not a flashy individual. He's a quiet individual. But he is the classic case of give a player more opportunity and he's going to make the most of it. He has really been consistent in his ability to generate offense and help his line mates create offense before Yanni Gourde returned. It was Jared McCann who slotted in at center on the top line between Schultz and Eberle. So this is a player that they're going to in all situations on the power play, 5-on-5, late pushes for evening goals. I love the way he's playing. He's been an analytics darling for quite some time, and he's proving it even if people don't notice him as much as they notice Brandon Tanev.
Obviously, we're still relatively early in the season, but is there any particular player or facet of the Krakens that has, you know, been a pleasant surprise to this point?
You know, it's a great question, and I think that for me, a surprise has been being able to see Yanni Gourde be what he is. This is a player obviously came from a talented Tampa Bay franchise. And when you have a situation like that, you want to see how much is within the player and how much was where he was in a talented lineup and who he was playing with. And I think he's really the heartbeat of this team, a different skill set, but reminds me a lot of an Artemi Panarin type in terms of a pace setter, as far as energy and skill for the players around him. And I have also been very impressed with this group's ability to survive a lot of curveballs. They've had some losses in the lineup to COVID. Captain Mark Giordano is currently out. They're now going through a massive rash of injuries again. And for them to continue to find their stride and actually have their most success to date with some of their biggest losses out of the lineup is a big statement to me that they're buying in, and that is so important with a new franchise.
Allison, tremendous stuff as always. Great having you on. It's a cliche, but it's nice when good things happen to good people. And hope fans out there that like to continue to follow those former Penguins read up on her stuff every day on the Seattle website. She does a tremendous job. We'll hope to have you on here a little bit later in the season. Thanks, Allison.
Anything you need, anytime, my friends. Take care. Thank you.
For Allison Lucan and Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll talk to you again next week on the 66 to 87 podcast.